So for those of you who are just coming in on Sunday, we've had a retreat going on for the last, since Thursday, entitled The Perfection of Patience, Transforming Vexation into Understanding and Equanimity. So the group had its closing circle this morning, and we'll be having lunch afterwards. But this is both the Sunday talk for everyone as well as the final talk for people in retreat, so I'll be tying that in. So before I gave a talk, since I know, how many people are online?
77.
So we have 77 people online who, of course, weren't at retreat, and probably half the people here weren't on retreat either. So so before I continue teaching about patience and equanimity and how to deal with the vexatious mind, I thought it might be interesting to invite some of the people who attended retreat just to speak briefly about their experience, sort of give us a first-person account. These are unscripted. I just asked them a little bit ago. So there's Brett, and Brett is not a member, and this is your first retreat. So I want you to kind of come up, sit up here. And then Amelia. Amelia, not a member, but you've been to retreat, a couple of retreats here before. Why don't you come up, short retreats. And then there's Mitch. Mitch is long-term member, and he's been on retreats in the past. So I thought it'd be a nice mix, unscripted. We'll see what they say. And I've just basically asked to share with you just their experience of coming on retreat, and especially in this retreat, what was meaningful, significant, challenging, all in 5 minutes. And Angie, when it gets close to five, just ring a bell. That doesn't mean you have to stop mid-sentence, but just gives you a sense it's coming to an end. So do you want to introduce yourself, Brett?
Sure. Like Fred said, I'm Brett. I've been coming to FCM for about 4 or 5 months or so. This was my first retreat.
And maybe just, forgive me interrupting, and you live in?
I live in Tampa.
You live in Tampa, and you work for a living?
I work in banking, banking, investing for a living. I live close by, so I commuted on this retreat. You have the choice. You can stay here overnight, or you can commute, and I commuted. And it was a great experience. I would highly recommend it. I had a lot of doubts. Number one being that only vegan food is served, and I don't usually eat vegan. And I thought I was going to lose like 20 pounds not having meat. But I said that before, but I want to say it again because kitchen staff, some of you are here, thank you. The food was all great. There is like not a thing I didn't like, so very grateful. Also working meditation. I mentioned this in one of the circles. You know, I thought Fred is some kind of diabolical genius. He gets you to pay to go on retreat, and then he puts you to work. And this guy's got it figured out. But doing working meditation was really enjoyable. Just getting to be outside and see everyone else working and coming together, and it was really amazing, like how much we got done. Like we picked up so much stuff. There's not enough room in all the buckets we put all the compost in. So that was really cool. The retreat was about transforming our vexations, things that kind of were tough to deal with, anger, anxiety, and there's a lot of things came up. You know, I've only been here for a few months, and I know when I first walked in, I had a lot of judgments about people I've never met, never talked to. Just little things, like I would look at someone and be like, "Ooh, I don't like the way that lady sits." That annoys me. She's probably annoying as heck. Look at that posture. So we got to work on transforming that. And that's really useful. And seeing that, I judge people because I'm new here. I'm insecure. I'm wondering what people are thinking of me. Am I sitting the right way? Am I walking the right way? And we've got to kind of see the I behind those things, and how when the I can fall away, we can have some more peace, more patience. So, thank you. I'm Brett.
Let me ask Brett a quick question. Just could you give it back to Brett? Just so you've never been on retreat before, right? This was a 3-day silent retreat.
Correct.
How did you do with just all the sitting and the silence? I mean, this is all new for you.
Yeah, it's all new. The silence, I really enjoyed the silence, especially we were silent when we ate and shared meals together. And mindful eating was really enjoyable. I'm not usually aware. I don't even taste food when I eat it usually. So that was great. I think the silence really helped also with the judgment. I think, you know, I feel leaving here, I feel really close to everyone who was on retreat. And a lot of people said that as well. And I think a big part of that is because when other people were talking and deep listening, deep sharing, I just had to shut up. I couldn't respond. I couldn't express my opinions or argue with anyone. And that developed an appreciation and a compassion for them and for why they think what they think. And I believe that if I can leave here and do that, you know, outside in the real world, if I can just shut up and listen and try to understand where someone's coming from, I think that could be very beneficial.
Thank you, Brett. So I guess Amelia's next. We're working toward seniority here. Thank you, Amelia.
I do want to say thank you, Mitch, for not making me go last. And Brett for making us laugh, as I'm sure you all can tell the last few days. I don't have that skill, so it's a hard act to follow. But this was my...
And just quickly, you're from and what
Amelia.
You do. And
I live in Gainesville with my husband and our cat. I'm a nurse. My husband and I have been developing our meditation practice and really honed it through the pandemic. And as things calmed down, we were seeking a community of like-minded people and found the retreat, which we first attended in the fall on mindfulness, led by Brian and Maria Teresa and Bill, and we're grateful to attend that again a few weeks ago, and just really enjoyed the community of people who are all intentionally trying to improve themselves and be mindful and think about the words they say. And as one of my fellow retreaters said this morning, Dylan, we all have something to learn from each other. We all have wisdom, experiences, whether we're in our teens or in our 80s. And that's something that I've enjoyed exploring. And it's not just been the positives, the things that people have been able to work through in their lives, but also, as we've learned this weekend, the little annoyances that everybody does, of things that aren't quite what I expect them to be doing or what I expect of the world or what I expect of myself. Those are also opportunities to learn from. And through this weekend, I've realized that probably about 99% at least, I can't say 100, 99% of my emotions and vexations come from expectations of myself, of the world around me, of the people around me. And being able to pull that thread, as I said this morning, and question my core expectations of myself and where that leads me of, do I really believe the world exists to manage my emotions? Does that really make sense? You know, that sounds crazy out loud, as Brett said this morning. And being able to follow that thought process and really reality check myself and pause when the guard comes up and notifies me of those negative beliefs about myself and the world and breathe through that. And I didn't really realize that work that I have to do. And I'm grateful for all of you and for the community here to support everybody in their own journey of those realizations and processes and thoughts and improvements. So thank you, Sangha.
Thank you, Amelia. Mitch?
Good morning, everybody. I'm Mitch. So I've been coming to the community just about 10 years now, a member for most of those years, and probably been on over a dozen retreats and as many intensives. And so a lot of the teachings I heard this weekend, I've heard before, but yet it's always fresh when you come with beginner's mind, and there's so much you can walk away with. And, you know, as both Brett and Amelia have said, I think most importantly, being in a container together with other retreatants where you're in silence, can learn together, but yet at the same time go deep with your own introspection really is incredibly powerful. I was just on a retreat last month, it was a 5-day retreat on death and dying, and it certainly gave me a sense of urgency to focus on my practice. But this weekend really gave me some back to basics. And, you know, I think some of my ahas or key takeaways were, you know, first off, I'm an easygoing guy, and so I don't think I give myself as much credit for carrying around vexation as I ought to. You know, I, like everybody else, have things that irritate me or that I may not be realizing. So I think I really, as I said this morning, took out the batteries that were dying in the old vexation radar and got some fresh ones, so I can really detect, you know, those sensations, or as we call it, the guard at the gate. You know, he got a vacation and he came back nice and refreshed. I think I also realized that we're always looking outside for the external factors or people that are causing the vexation, and, you know, the, as I called it, the elusive obvious on this retreat was there are no external factors. It's all inside of us and how we're responding and or not responding and maybe just reacting to those factors that are outside of us. So that was a really powerful aha moment for me. One of my fellow retreatants this morning used the metaphor of death and birth, or death and rebirth, and I thought that was a great metaphor because there's so many things you can bring to retreat that you could let die. You know, the stale energy, the stress in your relationships, the closed heart or closed mind, and just come back and feel a sense of rebirth for a different energy and a different commitment to your practice. So I think I really walked away with that as well. So deep bow to Fred for these wonderful teachings, and to my fellow retreatants. I learned so much from all of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so that maybe gave a little flavor. Yeah, the vexatious mind. Do we all know what the vexatious mind is? It is that mind that is not at ease. It is that mind that is not at peace. It is that mind that is agitated or disturbed. And the vexations, you know, can be all the things that we consider normal. I'm a little angry, I'm a little resentful, I'm a little irritated, I'm a little annoyed, I'm a little frustrated, I'm a little anxious, I'm a little, what else?
Judgmental.
Afraid, I'm judgmental, I'm disappointed,
annoyed.
I'm annoyed. Wanting, I'm wanting, I'm needing, I'm So we consider all that, oh, that's normal, right? Not just being a human being. Is that true? Yeah. The Buddha called that suffering, dukkha. And again, within the realm of suffering, there are, you know, there are mild ones and more significant ones. But it's very interesting that sort of what we consider our normal mind states and all the things that afflict it, or vexate it, that's a word, agitate it, the Buddha said that's suffering. Because the truth is about our mind. Our minds are open and spacious and naturally at ease. And more than that, are capable of generating incredibly wholesome mind states. And so this mind of vexation and this mind of peace or peacefulness or equanimity, equanimous mind, is really within the range of our capacity to make a choice. This retreat was called the Paramita of Patience. Paramita means perfection. It's one of the key Buddhist teachings. But it really, it's not just sort of what it has in English, sort of like forbearance, putting up with, enduring, which many of us think, oh, I'm being patient because I'm enduring it. I'm not acting out, I'm enduring. But in Buddhism, patience really means understanding that leads to acceptance. So it's not something that's imposed on us. I gotta be patient, gotta keep my mouth closed, can't say anything. I just got to put up with this, right? It'll pass. I got to put up with it. It's not that. Okay. It's a process that arises because I understand what? I understand that this situation is being caused by specific causes and conditions. And it has nothing to do, actually, with the person, and I'll talk about that, or even me. And that's a big shift in terms of how we view and understand life. Friday, it was a three-day retreat, but there really were two full days. Friday was all about vexation. Again, because we are often not aware when these emotional waves move through us because they seem so normal or they seem justified. Right? So we often say, well, wouldn't anybody be upset with this? Wouldn't anybody be annoyed with this? Wouldn't anybody be worried about this? You see, we think it's normal and we think, yeah, it's just anybody would be that. So the capacity of taking a whole range, and we have people do their own inventory. I recommend that, their own inventory. What are those mind states that disturb you, that bring disturbance or conflict into your relationships, that take away whatever ease of mind that you may have had, that prevents you from entering the world with openness, caring, love, you know, all those good qualities. You know, what is it that disturbs that? It's this vexatious mind. So kind of elevating awareness to noting what these mind states are very clearly, not just as mental formations, but also even more importantly, what they feel like in the body, because that's often where they first reveal themselves. We begin to feel a disturbance in the body, you know, a tightening of this, a constriction of that, some heat, right? So it often manifests that is very important. The key piece is what? Mindfulness. Something we we all know about. The problem is, for many of us, we leave it on the cushion. And we are lay people. We do not live on the cushion, do we? No. Our day is spent in life and a lot of interaction. That is where we really need mindfulness, presence. But the important thing, which I think many people don't understand, that the traditional meaning in the Buddhist path of mindfulness is this awareness, this mindfulness of what's arising with criteria. Or else it sort of has no transformative power. It can have a therapeutic power. You know, it's nice to be calmer and more stable and to kind of see what's going on and be present when you're brushing the teeth and right when you're eating your meals. I mean, that's all good therapeutically. But if we really don't deal with what is agitating the mind, what is causing the mind to get disturbed, we are not really doing what the Buddha said, which was, I teach the end of suffering. That's why I teach all this. Not to just lighten the load a little bit, but to really end suffering. And how do we end suffering? By first we need to acknowledge that these things are suffering, and two, we look into the causes. So once we establish what the vexatious mind was for everybody, we looked into the causes. Now, many people kind of know their perhaps psychological causes, their historical causes, right? For why they may react, emotionally and get swept away. And it's good to know that. And it's good to work on that aspect. But there's more fundamental, often unconscious beliefs that we have about ourselves in life, which are really underpinning that. So what do these beliefs look like? The world is here to meet my needs. Try that one on. And everybody in it is here to meet my needs. The world should be the way I want it to be. People should be the way I want it to be. Just close your eyes. Everything should happen the way I want it to. The day should go the way I want it to go. Everybody should be treating me the way I want to be treated. Everyone should like and appreciate me. Everyone should agree with my opinions. We are often not aware that these are the fundamental kind of beliefs that we are operating in this world. We only know that we are annoyed, upset, angry at someone or something or the world or, right? Because we think it should be different than what? Than the way it is. Now, that understanding that the world is the way it is comes from understanding that everything is produced by causes and conditions. It's very important. So view, right view is very important, right? So please close your eyes and choose somebody who annoys you. Right? For some people, it could be yourself. Some people are annoyed by them at themselves, but it could be people you're in relationship with, people you supposedly love, or you know, people live with. It could be family, it could be friends, it could be coworkers, or it could be a politician or something, right? But somebody, you know, when you're in their presence or you hear them, you get annoyed, you're irritated. Perhaps you don't like them. ask yourself, why do they annoy me? Why do I get irritated just thinking about them? And I would imagine it is in some level because we want them to be what we want them to be, and we don't want them to be the way they are. We can't accept who they are. And yet, this is the way they are. We can't accept what they're saying, but this is what they're saying. We can't accept what they're doing, but this is what they're doing. And in response to that, we get irritated, angry, annoyed. We could get fearful, we could get sad, we could get despairing, all kinds of things. Fundamentally, because the world is not the way we want it to be, expect it to be, or the people. Now, so that's a kind of good truth to reflect on. But come back to that person. Why is that person the way they are? Well, to understand that, you would have to understand what? Their causes and conditions. And in our tradition, we believe that everything is created by causes and conditions. So think about that person, and if you know something about them, that's good, but even if you don't know something about them, imagine that you were born into the family they were born into. Now I'm saying you. You were born into the family they were born into. And as you went through life, living their life, you actually experienced everything they experienced. The full dynamics of their family and of how their culture impinged on them, and you had all the experiences they had. Who would you be now? Yeah, this is very humbling. Who would you be now? And the truth is, we would be them. That is understanding. Our acceptance, our ability to accept people and the world and situations as they are, comes out of a deep understanding that everything is produced by causes and conditions. Any questions about that? That's a big one. I mean, I could go into other of these fundamental beliefs, but let me just say, underneath that is what? Let me just say that, and then we'll take questions. Underneath those beliefs we have, core beliefs we have about the world and how it should be and how people should be, and right? Underneath that is something even deeper. Do you know what that is? Me. And everybody in this room has a me, has an I, me, mine. Right. And we stand outside of life, coming from our sense of self and our sense of what's right and what's wrong and how people should be and how people shouldn't be. And as people who were just on retreat with me know, we basically, in our delusion, think we are kings and queens. And that everybody in the world should basically what? So simple. What do we all think?
Follow our rules.
What?
Follow our rules.
Follow our rules. They should drive the way we want them to drive. Is that true? Yeah. We had a lot of fun with traffic, and we had a lot of fun with call centers. Because in our world, when we call the call center, they pick right up and they take right care of us, don't they? Isn't that true? In our world. In our world, people treat us the way we want to be treated and talk to us the way we want to be talked to and take care of our needs the way we think they should, you know, and share our political views and our social views, right? That's it, that's our kingdom. And we think it should rule. Is that true? I'm not talking consciously. I mean, outwardly we may appear as nice, civilized people. But inwardly. And some, you know, ourselves, some of ourselves are quite tyrannical. Some of ourselves are a little more democratic. So they're different kinds of selves. And it's often a spectrum. Now, let me just say before we take questions, this type of understanding that leads to acceptance, that is what in Buddhism is called patience. Is not passivity. So let me anticipate any questions. It's not passivity. It doesn't mean you don't act. It doesn't mean you don't respond. What it means is that emotional affliction that covers our mind, the anger, the fear, the despair, the annoyance, all that emotional stuff that distorts is not in our minds. And we act in the world with clarity, with intelligence, with compassion, to what?
What?
What is? Yeah, we act with what is and we do our best to be helpful. So it's not passivity. Some people say, well, if I really understand everyone and everything and accept everything, does that mean I just have to kind of let everybody run rampant? No, you don't. But you understand they're doing what they're doing because, and this is so hard for us, we think they know better, right? But they don't know better. If they knew better, they would not be doing what they're doing. It's hard for us to accept that. In Buddhism, we call that delusion. People are just deluded, which means they're lost in their thoughts. You know, there's a clinical diagnosis for a delusion. Any clinicians in the room? I mean, so somebody who's delusive is somebody who believes their thoughts are real, which pretty much incorporates the whole human race. And the Buddha said we are delusive because our thoughts are delusive. They're not based on reality. When somebody's lost in delusive thought, clinically, we try to help them return to what? Reality. But we don't realize that we're lost in delusive thoughts. And one of our biggest delusive thoughts is we don't understand what's going on in this world. We make it about the person. We don't understand, we don't see the forces that are molding and pushing this person to act the way they do. And that doesn't mean you let them do what they want, but you don't hate them. You understand, in this moment, they can't help themselves being who they are. Now, it doesn't mean they can't change. Because this moment also has the potential for change. But how they're showing up is how they're showing up. What they said is what they said. What they did is what they did. I mean, when I say it, it sounds so obvious. Isn't it obvious when we talk that way? And yet when we think about the way we go through life, we're always distorting. So just before we move on, questions about this. Was that answered, Lene?
You answered my question.
Yeah.
But I
can
also make a comment.
Well, why don't we hold the comments toward the end, okay? So just any questions now about understanding what was said. Is it a long question? Short one. Okay, then I can repeat it for the, because people on hearing devices. So the question is, Delusion. The difference between delusive thoughts and... Oh, yeah, okay. So what's the difference between a delusive thought and a feeling like someone is what?
Instinct.
You have an instinct that somebody is lying. For example. Do you know somebody's lying? Do you have evidence that someone's lying? Very important. Because what you just said is often what we do, right? Now, it doesn't mean we can't have a sense of, but whether it's true or not, do we know? Right? We have a feeling, we say, I have a feeling. You know, feelings are all over the place. And remember, most of the way we interpret the world, most of the way we feel about things and people, most of, right? Our instincts, so to speak, are really based on our history. So it may not be actually accurate. Or it may be. But, you know, sort of hit or miss. Unless you really believe you have omniscience. If you know what I'm saying, omniscience, like I can really see what people are, I can see into their minds, and I can really see their thoughts, and I can really see the train of their unfolding, right? So that's kind of omniscience. But most of us don't have that ability, right? So what do we have to do? But also ask questions. Yeah. Ask questions. Communicate. Dialogue. Any other questions? Just what we said so far. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I just want to say I have one thought. My thoughts on, like, what do you think about? Okay, I get this following causes and conditions, but an example being like, hey, I'm at work, I'm dealing with another person who leads another team, and they're very, I know that they're lying, I have evidence that they're not doing their jobs and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
How do I strike a balance between, hey, I don't want to just get run over and stuff on?
Okay, so just to say, so at work, you know somebody.
There we go.
Is lying.
I know they're lying. And it's okay. The old story. I don't want to be the guy who's too pushy, who's, for lack of a better term, the hammer that comes in there. I know that if I take action against this person, they're probably going to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably going to lose their job. Their mm-hmm. team's probably going to mm-hmm. be shut down and reassigned. Whereas if I do nothing,
mm-hmm.
this is not good for the company. The company's exposed to millions of dollars of risk, et cetera,
All right, so
et cetera.
Let's stop. That's
How do
perfect.
I you see come there? Up with a balance?
All right. So what's your first name again?
Robert.
So if you're angry, if you're pissed, if you're afraid, if you're any of those things, those emotional colorations, it makes it very difficult for you to do what you say, was how can I respond wisely, intelligently, effectively, and sounds like even compassionately, because a person could lose their job, right? Yeah, so, yeah, you want to be as clear-headed weighing this. So for that, you don't need a lot of emotionality. Okay, so it's very important. That's what we're talking about, right? Right. Well, or, yeah, look, the bigger picture, the situation, the whole thing. Now, you can be very understanding that this person is just a product of their causes and conditions. I mean, you know, we take that. But on the other hand, you have a certain role to play in life, and you have to deal with it. By the way, let me just, I think we all know this. Life is a mess. Things are messy, Robert. You know, there's no clarity. You know, there's no right or wrong. Right? But as we talked about in retreat, and you've probably heard this, when we're in reactivity, when our emotional vexations, our emotionality, and our thoughts are just ruminating and repeating and all this, it is very hard to respond intelligently, wisely, compassionate to a situation that demands that. So the problem is most of us act from reactivity. from our moods, from our historical way of looking at things, from our delusive thinking, you know, our subjectivity. But life demands that we be open to the situation and as clear-headed as we can be. And whether that's at work, whether that's at home, whether that's dealing with family, friends, it's all the same. So patience is that willingness not to react impulsively, not to react from the vexatious mind, right? But to look at causes and conditions. So this person has cause and conditions, that really just describes everything. So this person has their causes, you have your causes, right? The conditions are we're all existing within this company, which has a purpose, a job, you know what I mean? So causing conditions kind of takes in the whole situation and allows us to kind of go, yeah, this is arising within the matrix, all these variables of cause and conditions, of which now you happen to be one of them. You might not have chosen to be one of them. You'd probably rather not have to be that one, but for some reason there you are because of your cause and conditions. You know, and whether you choose to act or not, that's your freedom. I mean, there's no easy answer here. I wish there was. So again, the vexatious mind is a mind that is primarily nurtured by these absolute kind of beliefs we have about the world and ourself, right? At the center of which is a king or a queen that thinks the world and the people in it should all be, you know, under their control. Now that's extreme, as I said, right? Some kings and queens are very democratic these days. Some kings and queens are more on the tyrannical, despotic side of life. You've got to decide which which one yours is, okay? So, you know, we did a lot of work on Saturday with our vexatious mind and what it's like and what it feels like and what's causing it. But of course, we want to transform, right? That's why we practice. Not just to uproot the weeds, you know, with a gardening analogy, just not to uproot the weeds that have gotten into our mind because of our own causes and conditions, but we want to plant wholesome, nutritious, nourishing, beautiful flowers and vegetables, for ourselves and for everyone else. So, on the one hand, we have this vexatious mind that we've sort of inherited. We've inherited from all the causes and conditions of our life and our society, as well as the fact that, and this is often hard for people, but it's very important to understand, because we have not understood what's healthy, what's not healthy, what's to be accepted, what's to be rejected, we have been cultivating unknowingly weeds in our garden. Plants that are not only not nourishing, but they're actually sapping our well-being, our happiness, our capacity to be happy, our capacity to be at peace, and our capacity to show up in that nourishing, peaceful way with everyone else in our life, right? That's because we didn't know better. No one told us, right, about the inner world and about the things that we are cultivating and growing there. We see the effects, but we don't see the roots, the cause. So once we begin this process of transforming the vexatious mind states, then more importantly is, what do I want to plant? See, and patience And acceptance and openness creates space in our mind that is now going, you know. A lot of people, it's all day like that. Right? It's not, you know, it's not like we're angry all day or we're scared all day or we're down all day. But it's like in the background, as it's been, you know, just always running its mouth. And it's often not a very good dialogue. Right? And it's taking up space in our minds. Now, one of the other things that's important to note and for the people on retreat to remember is to remain in our vexatious mind, to remain cultivating our vexatious mind states, it takes no effort. They just show up. Anybody notice that? You know, you might have got up in the morning and say, today, I'm not going to get angry. I'm going to be accepting of everyone. I'm going to be loving. That's the way I'm going to be today, right? 10 minutes later, right? Okay, maybe 5 minutes later. Now, why is that? Because they're just habituated, and they show up unannounced. This is important to understand. So, to at this stage, to maintain the vexatious mind takes no effort. It'll just do its thing, okay? The problem is to cultivate the wholesome takes effort. You see, that takes effort. That takes, you know, and the key piece here is this mindful awareness with criteria. And in the retreat, we talk about that mindfulness as the guard at the gate. There's got to be somebody at the gate, right? Knowing what's wholesome, what's not wholesome. What's to be accepted, what's to be rejected. What to let in, what not to let in. And many of us have been running our lives, the gate's just up. The gate's just up. There's nobody tending the gate 24/7. So anything, any thought, any feeling can just enter and leave whenever they want. Is that clear? So mindfulness, this practice that we did this morning, and especially it's important to bring into our daily life, just simply means I am aware of what's going on within me and around me, and I have criteria. I know when an unwholesome mind is at the gate. I can feel them, right? Beginning to get a little tight, a little tense, a little hot. Thoughts are beginning to race a little bit, you know, I can tell. There's somebody at the gate. Now, once you have criteria, you check. Mm-mm. I don't want to let that one in anymore. So again, how we deal with those vexatious mind states, you know, there are many different ways to deal with it. The important thing is that we have a strategy. We have a strategy. And we have mindfulness at the gate. And it doesn't have to be like super sharp. You don't have to be a great meditator. Right? It's just a willingness to be aware. I'm aware of what's going on within me now. And I remember, you know, sati, which is often translated mindfulness, actually means recollection, remembering. I remember what to accept, what to reject, what to let in, what not to let in. You know, I remember what I'm doing. I remember my the aspirations or intentions I set 10 minutes ago. That's mindfulness. So mindfulness has a very positive connotation. Yeah. Learning to pause. Learning to slow down. Many of us run at what speed during the day? What? Warp speed. Right. You know. Does everybody know what he's talking about when he talks about warp speed? How many people feel, yeah, that somewhat describes the way I run my day, warp speed? Okay, and you know, and maybe there are a few grades. What are some grades below warp speed? But what? Turbo. So anyhow, yeah, and again, these days, especially with devices, and what do many people do the first thing they wake up in the morning? Admit it, what do? Check your device. You're right. You enter the world of warp speed almost immediately. There's no rest. There's no time off. And so that's what we're dealing with. It's very hard to transform these vexatious mind states if there's no space. No space for self-observation, no space for self-awareness, no space to see what's going on. Unfortunately, that takes a little bit of space. Space. It doesn't have to be for a three-day retreat. Three-day retreats are wonderful because we can put it all down and put ourselves in another environment away from all that activity. And during retreat, everybody has to surrender their phones. I often joke it's like the Old West, you know, we had to surrender your six-shooter at the, you know, when you came into the saloon. Here people have to surrender if they brought them. If they left them home, that's fine, or in the car. But if they brought them, we just put them in the box and give it back to them at the end. So we can have some space to be in touch with ourselves, to be in touch with life, to be in touch with reality, to be in touch with nature, especially in our society, culture. So necessary. So, but many of us, we have responsible jobs, right? Is that true? And we're very responsible people. Is that true? And unfortunately, we take ourselves and our responsibilities a little too seriously. A lot of people say, well, I don't have any time to stop. Really? Is that true? Challenge your thought. You don't have time to stop? What? You can stop. Yeah. I mean, is anybody watching over you like every second of the day? You have somebody watching over you?
Technically, they can be.
Right. But are they? Yeah, the stopping is in the privacy of your own mind. You can actually pretend you're working. Okay? Because if you don't stop when it's beginning, when the vexation is beginning within you, see, when it's beginning, when it's not too strong yet, when it's just kind of knocking, right? And you're aware, you check, bad actor, don't let him in. And just do something, you know. You have a chance. But if you don't stop, be self-aware even just for a moment, and do something, and it gets in, then it's going to start running amok. And then it's very hard, right? It's much easier to get them at the gate before they get in. Once they get in, it's very hard to catch them. And then when they get in, as the day goes on, they kind of meet up with other vexation mind states you've had during the day, right? So here you're a little annoyed, and here you're a little irritated, and here you're a little pissed, and here you're a little worried, and here you're a little hurt, and here you're a little, what? What else? Here you're a little what? Sound like somebody you know? Here you're a little what? Now here your critical mind is being active, you're judgmental. What else is, you know, what are these little things going on in the day? Yeah, we're insecure, we have insecure thoughts, we doubt ourselves. We get disappointed, you know, see, You see? And we wonder why I'm not happy. You see? Why am I not happy? You know, because we'll say, I mean, there's really nothing bad in my life. You know what I'm saying? Why, you know, why am I not happy? It's because all this stuff, all these vexation little mind states, some are big, but even if they're little, they're cumulative. Right? And now they're all just running around. And then people have trouble what? Falling asleep at night. Why is that? Vexatious mind, not at ease, not relaxed. You know, I shared at the retreat, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, everybody knows who Thich Nhat Hanh is, you know, very creative. So as opposed to the traditional way we talk about patience, you know, as I said, it's understanding that leads to acceptance, understanding of causes and conditions, understanding of what the cause is. He calls patience inclusiveness, which I think is kind of brilliant. It's another word. What does inclusiveness mean? It means I include whatever is happening. I include it. Annoying people, I include them in my world. Tough situations, I include them in my world. Climate change, climate crisis, I include it in my world. It's all part of my world. I'm no longer standing over here judging, evaluating, putting people in labels and, you know, doing the whole thing. I include everybody and everything. And everything in my world is something that I have to what? Yeah, work with, work on, work with, yeah, that's all. Got all this wonderful stuff to work with. So you include, once you include, all that vexation goes away. Once we decide, you know, we're no longer going to exclude people because I consider them annoying. What does annoying mean? Think about it. Why are we annoyed by people? What? Yeah, well, why are we annoyed? Why is annoyance arising? Anybody ever annoyed anybody? Come on, everybody here gets annoyed. What? What? They're what? Yeah. They're not the way we want them to be. They're not talking the way we want them to talk. We don't have the sense of humor we think they should have. We don't, you know, we don't have the views they think that they should have, right? So we find them annoying or irritating. But it's all because I'm standing over here going, they should not be who they are. I mean, that's like tyranny. Isn't it? Turn it around. Do you think you should be entitled to your own sense of humor or not? What do you think? Everybody have their own sense of humor? Do you believe you're entitled to it? Yeah. Are you entitled to your views and ideas about life and situations? Would you like other people to not be judging you or evaluating you or have opinions about you, but to be accepting of you the way you are? Just on a random basis, would you like that? Yeah, who wouldn't? Turn it around again. Can I extend that to everybody else? What I'd like, the way I'd like the world to take care of me. So then it's at least mutual. You put up with my sense of humor, I'll put up with your sense of humor. That's fair. Right? You know, you put up with my social views, I'll put up with your social views. That sounds fair. There's no violence in that. There's no war in that. There's no hate in that. Tell me. You have a question? Yeah, just wait, you know, with people.
Thank you. I feel like I have a maximum amount of energy at any given time.
Yeah.
So if I'm well rested, I have a little more of that energy, or and then what life is throwing at me kind of limits what amount of energy I have. And so I find that, you know, when I hear you saying be, you know, more fully inclusive, that sometimes I don't know, I get to the top of the jar, and when the next thing comes, I just kind of say, sorry, I just don't have the energy to deal with your tirade or your mass or...
Hold on a second. Yes. Are you saying, Tammy, that you're a human being and you're not a fully perfected Buddha yet? Is that
maybe
what you're implying?
All of that, of course.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess I just wanted you to speak to, I mean, just because I'm aware, you know,
when
my energy starts running low and I know that I just don't have...
Yeah, so
what
I would
takes.
Say, I mean, I understand that. You know, it's like it's like our car, right? I mean, when the gas tank is on empty, or there's just a little bit of, you know, only enough to get you to the gas station, this is not the time to, you know, plan a trip, right? And that's sort of what you're saying. But the thing I would say to all of us, because everybody knows what she's talking about, sometimes you just feel like, yeah, I've given all I can do. There's nothing left. Ask yourself, review, where has my energy been all day? You know, what's been sapping my energy? And a lot of time it's these unconscious vexations. Things are eating at me, things are annoying. I push them to the background because, you know, like you have a full-time job, you've got a family, you know, you have lots to take care of, right? But at the same time that, you know, there's the Tammy who takes care of business, there's also the personal Tammy, you see, and she may be having her own little thing going on back there. So to ask ourselves, what's sapping my energy? It's an interesting question. I mean, I'm not saying that that's what is, but sometimes it's not life itself that's sapping my energy. It's these vexatious mind states that are... Anybody ever be angry? Anybody ever been angry? What happens when you're angry? Repetition? How many times? Three? Right? How many times when you're angry, when you're upset, when you're pissed, when you're annoyed, and it's just, it keeps repeating, emotionality. You don't do anything with it because whatever. Yeah, that saps energy. There's a lot of energy that goes into that. A lot of energy goes into worry. A lot of energy goes into anxiety. I mean, all these other afflictive mind states, they sap our energy. So paying attention to this way may actually give you more energy. So I'm just saying, not to you, but to all of us, you know, when we're in that place, just to, you know, evaluate, review, you know, what is really, you know, where's my mind been today and what's really sapping my energy? Has anybody ever been happy? Does being happy sap your energy? Interesting. Anybody ever have a loving, kind, compassionate thought? Does having those kinds of thoughts sap your energy? See, it's interesting. No, actually those kind of thoughts what? Energize you. Yeah, I'm feeling really good, you know, I'm energetic. You know, mind's good, body's good, yeah, energetic. So see what saps our energy. You know, we all need to learn to work with ourselves. Very important, you know. We need to know who we are. You know, mindfulness meditation is not just about, you know, drinking tea mindfully. Even though that makes drinking tea more enjoyable to be present to it. But our awareness of when we're drinking tea or not drinking tea is not the cause of our suffering. A sideshow. The cause of our suffering is our vexatious mind and our wrong views and distorted views. This is the cause of our suffering. And so mindfulness, meditation, these are the tools that can help us become self-aware of what's just going on in here. Right? And you know, Brett in the beginning of retreat, he said, is there any way to get out of subjectivity? Remember your question? And I said, of course, this is what this practice is about. You know, can I be the objective witness of my own experience, of my own thoughts, of my own emotional state, with healthy assessment criteria. Yeah, I mean, that's what the whole practice is about, right? Yeah. That we can get out of this complete subjectivity of me and begin to step back and you know, observe Fred. See, that's my job. Now, many of us think our job is to observe everybody else and their processes and their problems and their emotional stuff, right? But actually, my job is to observe Fred and observe his mind and his actions and his speech patterns and make sure they're in accord with my values, you know what I mean, with my aspirations, my intentions, right? That's easy. Why is that easy? That's a piece of cake. Why is that? Because Fred's right here. I don't have to go anywhere. Right? I don't have to make it up. I don't have to guess, right? I mean, if I want to know what's going with Jema, I have no idea, right? Because Jema's right there, she's smiling, she's looking attentive. Who knows? She could be thinking, God, Fred is a jerk. Or she could be thinking about what's happening at home and what you see. I mean, I have no idea, do I? Right? I mean, in talking to her, I can perhaps learn, or she communicates with me, but Fred's always available to me. Always available. I just gotta what? Turn and look. What's arising in the mind? What's arising in the body? You know. What is it that he wants to say? You know, what's going on with him? That's how we do the work of transformation. And meditation and mindfulness, concentration, these are the tools we use. So let's, final word to retreatants. You're going to be going back. So we've been in this is speaking to retreatants, but everybody's here. So we've been we've been in ideal conditions, right? This is like a laboratory, you know, where they kind of do an experiment and they try to control all the variables. Right? So we've been in ideal conditions, right? We've been away from the world. We've been in silence. We've been nurtured with lots of dharma and meditation and practice. We've had, you know, people preparing meals for us. I mean, but soon we're going to be going back, for those on retreat, to this world that we live in. Of relationships, of people, of work, of news, right? The world that everybody who wasn't on retreat came to already today, right? And now we're going back out into it. And so it's very important, and even for all those of us who just came this morning, when we go back out in the world, if we do not go back out in the world with some sense of what I'm doing, especially if you sort of have a spiritual aspiration or a personal aspiration for some kind of personal healing or transformation, some kind of sense, yeah, I want to live a better life. I want to be less stressed. I want to be more happy. I want to be more peaceful. I want to be less angry. I want to be less anxious. You know what I mean? All that stuff. I want to be kinder. I want to, right? Unless that's in our mind with some degree of clarity, what's going to happen? We'll just get swept away. Swept away by external situations or swept away by the winds of our own karma, our own past, our own cause and conditions, just waiting to sweep us away. Right? So when Jema goes home, sees her boys, right? You have to be ready. You have to be very clear, this is how I want to respond differently. Because if not, remember I said, to continue to be who we've been takes no work. The old Jema will just show up, don't worry. Chris, the old Chris is going to show up. Right? I mean, everybody who's on retreat, they've just been waiting. When are we going to get out of this retreat environment and can go back home and just cut loose, right? I mean, just a warning. He or she is there, and they're just waiting. So we got to be a little smart, okay? We got to be smart, mindful, have the guard at the gate. Any quick questions? Just questions. We have a couple of minutes. Yeah, what's quick? Yeah.
Yeah, like at what age would you start teaching this to children?
What? Well, what age should we teach it to you?
Well, I'm not 67.
All right. That's a good age to begin. Yeah. Let's save that for... Yeah. Yes? Old Dylan. Dylan is... I don't know Dylan. He showed up at this retreat coming from Orlando, and he's a man with lots of questions. And I appreciate it. But go on, Dylan.
Yeah, thanks. So
he's getting your last chance, only a few minutes left.
So I can ask two questions? No, I'm kidding. So this is something that's kind of been I've been grappling with, but it seems like to be able to accept something or someone as they are or as it is, you need to have an understanding, a deep understanding of what it is.
Well, it makes it easier. It makes it easier. I mean, we can just be very accepting people, but there may not be wisdom, and it may break down.
Right.
So it makes it easier if we're, yeah, if we're more understanding of causes and conditions, right?
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it seems like to get that understanding, that deep understanding, you have to be able to sit with the phenomena that are arising and really observe them. And to do that, it seems like you have to have some level of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it's kind of like two horns, like a cycle that it's almost like I'm locked out of, you know? Like something comes up and I want to accept it, but I can't find it within me to accept it because I don't really understand it.
Okay.
But I don't understand it because I can't take the time to just try to understand it, you know
okay.
what I mean? I can't accept
yeah, yeah.
it. So I was hoping you could shed some
light. It's not going to happen overnight. You're not going to get it right away. You practice. Have you ever learned to play an instrument? What do you play?
The drums.
You played the drums. First time you picked up a drumstick, how was it?
I mean, it was fun, but it didn't sound very good.
Yeah, exactly right. All right. But you wanted to master it, right? So over time, you did what?
Practice.
Did you have a teacher who maybe kind of gave you instruction, corrected you? How did you know you were making mistakes?
YouTube.
So you had the YouTube instructor. Okay. Well, that's kind of a new type of instructor I know people have. All right. But, I mean, you had something that you could evaluate how you were doing. Right? And then so you would practice. You would listen to yourself. You would then go back to the YouTube. You'd hear how they played it. So they did it differently, you go back, right? Back and forth. And over time, what happened?
It started to sound a little less bad.
Yeah. Well, that's our life, okay? Over time, you'll get it. Don't worry. You know, it's hard to tell young people to be patient. I understand. Yeah. You'd like it right now. But as you can see, you're acknowledging, yeah, I don't quite get it all yet. I mean, I get the words, but in actual practice, I don't get it. Yeah, I'm going to have to work it. Right? So that's practice. You know, that is the problem, you see, with listening to YouTube and listening to podcasts and reading books and blah, 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 is we get it intellectually. Right? And yet we're always finding that our day-to-day life always is coming up short. And many of us get frustrated or this or that because we go, you know, I know better. But we just know better up here. We don't really know better. And so that's a process. It takes time. Now, at the same time, if you practice 15 minutes a day, your drums, and if you practice 4 hours a day, is the trajectory of you getting better at drums going to be different?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So the more time, more intentionality you apply to whatever you want to learn, yeah, there's a good chance you'll get better at it sooner or quicker. So that's true too. Okay, so it's both and. It's like anything else, you know, how much energy, how much awareness, how much time do I want to give to my own personal transformation and healing? That's a personal choice, right? We all have to answer that. It comes from the inside, but, you know, the truth of, you know, how much energy, how much time, how much intentionality we bring to anything probably has a lot to do with how quickly we learn or transform or change, right? You told me you used to play soccer, right? I mean, if you want to get good at soccer, I mean, can you play once a week? What? You laugh. What? Because why?
I mean, you're not going to get much better.
Yeah, I mean, you see, it's obvious, isn't it? Right. But if you practice a couple hours every day, there's a better chance you'll get what?
Yeah, you'll get better quick.
Yeah. And people who are really good, how much do they play?
You practice all the time.
Yeah. I mean, you get it? The wonderful thing about this practice is you don't have to go out onto the soccer field. Because the practice is all in our own minds. It's right here. We can do it all the time, but we have to do a lot of work of remembering. We have to do a lot of to remember. And the practice is what? Forgetting, remembering. Remembering, forgetting. Forgetting, remembering. All day long. And over time, forgetting will be less, remembering will be wrong. That's the practice. So good. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for the treatments. Thank you, everyone else.